ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Right, can we have a little more light? Saving it a few times. Reading from text 35 from a very wonderful chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home, Canto 4, Chapter 8. Dhruva uvacha, soyam shama, soyam shamo bhagavata, sukha dukha hatatmana, darshita kripaya pumsam, dudarsho smad vidhastayaha, Dhruva uvacha, soyam shamo bhagavata, sukha dukha hatatmana, darshita kripaya pumsa, durdarsho smad vidhastayaha, Dhruva uvacha. Dhruva Maharaj said, Saha, that, Ayam, this, Shamaha, equilibrium of mind, Bhagavata, by your lordship, Sukha Dukkha, happiness and miseries, Hata Atmanam, those who are afflicted, Darshitaha, shown, Kripaya, by mercy, Pungsam, of the people, Dudarshaha, very difficult to perceive, Asmat vidhai, by persons like us. Tu, but, yaha, whatever you have said. Translation, Dhruva Maharaj said, my dear Lord Narada Ji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly a very good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance, and this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. We'll go back and read again what Dhruva Maharaj says after reading Prabhupada's purport. In Prabhupada's purport, he's taking a very particular angle or direction. And there's other thoughts on what Dhruva Maharaj is saying also. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are various classes of men. One class is called Akamis, referring to those who have no material desire. Material desire. Desire must exist, either material or spiritual. Material desire, arises when one wants to satisfy one's personal senses. One who is ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be said to have spiritual desire. Dhruva did not accept the instruction given by the great Saint Narada because he thought himself unfit for such instruction, which prohibited all material desires. It is not a fact, however, that those who have material desires are prohibited from worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the essential instruction from the life of Dhruva. He frankly admitted that his heart was full of material desires. He was very much affected by the cruel words of his stepmother. Whereas those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation or adoration. Paragraph. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that persons who are actually advanced in spiritual life do not care for the dual behavior of this material world, but Dhruva Maharaj frankly admitted that he was not beyond the affliction of material distress and happiness. He was confident that the instruction given by Narada was valuable, yet he could not accept it. The question raised here is whether or not a person afflicted by material desires is fit to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The answer is, everyone is fit to worship Him, even if one has many material desires to fulfill. You should take to Krishna consciousness and worship the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is so merciful that He fulfills everyone's desires. Through this narration, it will become very clear that no one is barred from worshiping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if one has many material desires. Dhruva Uvacha, Soyam Shamo Bhagavata Sukha Dukha Atatmanam Darshiyata Kripaya Pungsam Durdarsho Smad Vidais Tuyaha. Dhruva Maharaj said, my dear Lord Naradaji, for a person whose heart is disturbed by the material conditions of happiness and distress, whatever you have so kindly explained for attainment of peace of mind is certainly very good instruction. But as far as I am concerned, I am covered by ignorance and this philosophy does not touch my heart. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is disclosing or expanding the second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam verse, Akama, Sarvakamoha, Mokshakama, Udaradi, Tivrena Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusham Param. That verse says that whether one has no material desire or one has all material desire or one has a desire for liberation, all are eligible for devotional service. And when one engages in tivra bhakti, very strong devotional service, one comes to Krishna's abode, yajeta purusham param. Everyone is eligible to go to Krishna. Everyone is eligible for the process to go to Krishna, even if one has material desire. And Prabhupada is explaining that the big picture of Dhruva Maharaj, the story of Dhruva Maharaj, is one example, or a like extreme example, of how one can go from material desire to pure devotional service. And there are steps, there are parts that go step by step by step, if one has all material desire. And it's not that, so another approach to this is, it's not that one has to act on material desire in order to get to Krishna. Through that dovetail, this material desire program with Krishna consciousness, become purified by the dovetail program and end up in Krishna Loka. Oh, small thing. By the way, attachment to the Supreme Lord has to be part of that picture. Otherwise you don't get there. And that's what the impetus for attachment to Vishnu came from, his mother. Because when Dhruva went, literally, because he's just a small boy, 5-6 years of age, crying, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? My daddy pushed me off his lap. Or my stepmother pushed me off my daddy's lap. And she said these mean things." What'd she say? She said, "I can't sit on daddy's lap. I have to die first. And then take birth again from her womb, and then I can sit on daddy's lap." And you know what daddy did? He didn't say anything. He just sat there. "Mommy, help me. I want a kingdom." "Not just my father's kingdom. Better than my father's kingdom. Better than my father's father's kingdom. Better than my father's 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 kingdom. Mommy, help me get that kingdom." That's a big desire. "I can't help you. Your father has more affection for his co-wife than me. I can't influence your father. And as far as getting a kingdom, if you get the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu, he can achieve anything. Just find Lord Vishnu, and he'll, anything can happen." Where's Lord Vishnu? So through that advice of his mother, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can accomplish anything. He's the Supreme Controller. He can accomplish anything. "I'm helpless. I'm your mother. I have great affection for you, but I can't do anything. I'm helpless." And Krishna, he's not helpless. Krishna is the Supreme. Lord Vishnu is the Supreme. He had faith in his mother. And because he had faith in his mother, and his mother said, "Go that away. Where's Lord Vishnu?" I'm a woman. I know the sages, they go to the forest and they somehow find Lord Vishnu. "Okay, Mom, see you later. I'm off to the forest to find Lord Vishnu." He took her literally. So there was some attachment for Vishnu along with material desire. So it's called Kama Mishra Bhakti. Mishra means mixed. Kama means desire. Devotion mixed with desire, or in Dhruva's case, is a little bit the other way around. Desire mixed with a little devotion. His interest in finding Vishnu was to fulfill material desire, but Vishnu, and he wanted the material desire fulfilled. So it's a classic example of how one can go from sat-kama, bhakti, devotion to the Supreme Lord with material desire, to nishkam bhakti, no material desire. Just by direct devotional service. Now what literally he's saying here in the verse, Dhruva's heard nice instruction, going back just a bit. My dear Dhruva, Narada met Dhruva in the forest and said, Dhruva, you're just a small boy. What you want to achieve is very difficult. Even for great tapasvis and sages and mystics and yogis, it takes lifetimes. You're just a small boy. Very dangerous here in the forest. You should go back home. And when you get older, grown up, then you can come back and give it a try. Dhruva wasn't responding. You know what that look is like. He didn't shake his head, no. But it was, no, I'm not going back. Then he gave him explanation of, if you want to reach Vishnu, you have to be in transcendence. In this program of moved by fruitive desire, it doesn't connect with transcendence. Because as long as there is a desire for material happiness, or a desire to become free from material unhappiness, sukha and dukkha, raga, dvesha, you're going to stay in this material platform, and you're not going to be able to reach Vishnu. You should give it up. But rather, you should take the high road, at least by regulation. When there's somebody more advanced, somebody older, your father and your mother, stepmother, respect them. Somebody is a peer, you become friends. Those that are less advanced, be kind to them, show compassion. Like that, you can regulate yourself. Good instruction. Dhruva is saying, for one who is afflicted by happiness and distress, the material desire program brings happiness and so-called happiness, material happiness, and distress. It's good instruction. But I'm so covered in ignorance, it doesn't enter. So it's like saying no to Krishna. Krishna is inviting and is saying no. At least he's saying no to Narada, and Narada is representing Krishna. No. Good instruction, but no, I can't. Because I'm too much covered by ignorance. Now we could say that too. Like, okay, Prabhus, all those that are living in the temple must come to Mangalarti. I know it's good instruction, Prabhu, but I'm too much covered by ignorance, and I really can't. It's good instruction. Or, I have an anger problem. Well, I've got an anger problem, but I know it's not good to exhibit anger, but what can I do if I've got an anger problem? It's good instruction. Curb my anger and think of Krishna and all those. It's nice instruction. One can overcome anger, and one can overcome sleepiness and the mode of ignorance by good instruction. That's what good instruction is for. But I can say, no, I can't control the mind, I can't control my anger, etc., etc., etc. So I surrender to the material energy. One doesn't have to surrender to the material energy. Then you can go to the other side and say, well, Prabhu, I just have to be honest. And you'll fill in the blank. You know, I have an anger problem. And so I'll just, you know, do my devotional service and, you know, let my anger problem work itself out in due course of time. And etc. It's not necessary to do that. One of the thing that makes it possible to overcome, directly to overcome those material shortcomings, shortcomings or pushings, is hearing. If that hearing enters the heart, one can be lifted. One who is situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge can easily cross over the ocean of material existence. And so many other nice things that Krishna speaks about in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita about transcendental knowledge. Nara is giving transcendental knowledge. One who takes shelter of such instruction can overcome that difficulty and engage in devotional service directly. But if one's heart is not open, and that's what he's saying, this kind of philosophy does not touch my heart. It doesn't touch his heart because he's closed his heart. He's saying, I am covered by ignorance. But who in the material world isn't covered by ignorance? If they're not covered by ignorance, they're not in the material world. They're covered. Everyone's covered by ignorance. So it's opening or closing of the heart. So it hasn't touched my heart. And because it hasn't touched me, it's like I've got my own way of how I want to do this. Thanks, but no thanks. I've got my own way. Or, you know, I don't want that way. Give me another way. Is there anything else on the menu? How to get to Krishna if I have material desire? And the answer is yes, there's something else on the menu. It's just like the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Topmost is this, if you can't do this, do that, if you can't do that, do the next thing, if you can't do the next thing, and so on. So Narada is giving him a path, a channel, to go directly. And he doesn't want to directly. He's saying, no, it's another choice on the menu, please. So the indirectly is also effective. But it's going to go back to the akama, sarvakama, mokshakama udaradi verse from the second canto. It's not that this advice of Narada is good for those who don't have material desire. The advice of Narada is good for those who also have material desire. It's for those who have material desire. Narada knows what he's doing. He's giving it to Narada because he has material desire. He knows very well. He has material desire. Here's the medicine. No, I don't like that medicine. It's good for us. Similarly, those who have material desire. Those that have no material desire, it's good medicine too. Transcendental, the path of transcendence is good for those that have no material desire. In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna makes an argument to Krishna that is His, he had many arguments. There's different levels of arguments, in fact. And one of those arguments is that karma sannyas. I see there's complication in the act of killing, which is true, other than in the course of duty. There's certainly implication for killing. And so to avoid that complication of karma for killing, let me give up this activity, although it's prescribed. One of the counter-arguments that Krishna gives is, Arjuna, you're not qualified. Karma sannyas is not fit for you because you have desires. You can't simply renounce work and become a mendicant sannyasi. It's not your calling. It's not your qualification. It's not meant for you. It's not the purification that's meant for you. Although there are other places in the Bhagavatam that describe one who takes to devotional service, please know that there's no undue bad reaction that comes to them for neglecting duty. If one simply engages in devotional service, with full faith in Krishna, all one's obligations are fulfilled. It doesn't mean, oh, this is a nice program, I become a householder, now I have children. It's a botheration. I'll just go live in the temple and do devotional service. And, you know, well, there's no reaction because I've, you know, although I've become a father or a parent, I'll just engage in devotional service and whatever happens, there's no reaction. It's not quite like that. That should be done in devotional service and there's no material implication. But so many duties, there was one lecture I recall listening to. Prabhupada began explaining that particular verse by explaining the duties that one has according to the dharma shastras. He was describing particularly the duties of grihastha. And he went on for about 15 minutes describing dharma shastra duties. Prabhupada ended after 15 minutes and said, practically speaking, we wouldn't get beyond, you know, getting out of bed and the whole day would be gone fulfilling all the various duties that a householder has to perform. One's forefathers, one's parents, cooking, because you're cooking, there's living entities that are little living entities, microbial living entities that are killed by lighting the fire and cooking. You have to cook because you have to make offering to the deity. You have to do something to counter. If you're not on the platform of devotional service, the number of things that one has to do, the rituals that one has to observe, it's like, whew, there's no time for anything. Just to counteract and execute, you know, the acts of piety and the counteraction for the unintentional impiety. It's like huge. And then Prabhupada very quickly said, therefore we engage in devotional service rather than the rituals of Varna and Ashram and that section, the Dharma Shastra section of the Vedas. Very, very involved. What to speak of qualified brahmanas being unavailable to help one understand the scriptures and execute all those duties. So, devotional service alone is sufficient. And in the sakama or sarvakama, all material desire, that's dhruva, is all, it's a very strong material desire personified. Massive kingdom. I mean, the kingdom that he wanted surpassed the kingdom of Lord Brahma. What's that? Lord Brahma is the topmost living being in this universe. What's some desire beyond this universe? He's got, you know, he's just a kid. But he was really serious. Really strong desire. So his desire was so strong, his heart was closed. And because his heart was closed, the ignorance prevented him from receiving that transcendental teaching of Narada and the path to go directly to Krishna in devotional service. So he had to use the mixed program, mixed devotional service program. Serve Krishna or approach Krishna with the desire to fulfill something. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses the word dovetail in Sri Brahma Samhita. Dovetail. Material desire, Krishna's interest. Oh, look at this, they fit. I like music. The Hare Krishnas have lots of music. Of the music, Krishna. I like to eat. Hare Krishnas like to eat. I'll eat for Krishna. I like to read books. Hare Krishnas have lots of books. Put those two things together. I'll read books. Hare Krishna books. Because it fulfills a desire. I like to dance. Hare Krishnas like to dance. Hey. I mean, for Krishna's pleasure, yeah, right. But I like to dance. We met some of those people in Harinam, downtown Chicago, Taste of Chicago. And we got some devotees that went out and danced with them, and they were dancing and dancing, and, you know, for Krishna, dancing. The dovetail. So, now, the higher is only for Krishna's pleasure. That's stated here. One who is ready to... This is where the test comes, when there's a little pinch. It says, well, what about something that I don't desire? And do that for Krishna? That's the statement. One who is ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be said to have spiritual desire. So Dhruva was not in the spiritual desire position, so he rejected. He could have accepted, saying, set aside that desire and act on a higher platform, on the strength of the instruction. He could have done that too. He didn't. He chose differently. And we also can choose or choose differently. Even for those who choose differently, there is still elevation up to the stage of spiritual perfection in the dovetail program. So Narada came to understand the nature. Dhruva was prepared to accept the dovetail program. He wasn't prepared to accept the direct program. So for sarva kama personalities, those who have all material desire, or some material desire, some strong material desire, purification is also possible. Now for those, go back up to this higher level, because Prabhupada speaks about it, for those who have no material desire, it doesn't mean that their intelligence goes into the off position and they become zombies. There's like this remote control thing. They don't think, they don't feel, they don't understand. They're just zombies. That's not it. They can see things, they can feel things, they can discern features of duality. Someone is being friendly, someone is being unfriendly. And so on. They can see distinctions of duality. in this case, my stepmother was not Suniti, she was Sunasti. Su means very. She was very nasty. And she spoke something very to a little boy. Very nasty. Okay. If it was Prahlad Maharaj, you know, it wouldn't have affected him at all. His father said somebody, not just nasty, tormenting, and did tormenting. And Prahlad was unaffected. And that's the position of one who has no material desire. Those who are spiritually advanced do not care about anyone's condemnation or adoration. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that persons who are actually advanced in spiritual life do not care for the dual behavior of the material world. So it's not taking the person, but it's prakriti, it's material energy. The person is the instrument of prakriti. And when the instrument of prakriti comes, or prakriti comes, and does this kind of duality or that kind of duality, the one that has no material desire, they're happy. They remain happy because their happiness is on another platform. That's their qualification for spiritual happiness. And one that doesn't contact that spiritual happiness, their happiness is not coming from within, it's coming from this configuration or that configuration of the material energy, prakriti. But that's not happiness, whether it's this or that. In any case, it just looks like it. So if it's this, I'm happy. If it's that, I'm unhappy. A nice example, so many nice examples, but one is Indra. When he does something foolish, like offend Brihaspati, Brihaspati leaves. And when Brihaspati leaves, the protection of the demigods headed by Lord Indra is gone. So the demigods come and attack, and the demons come and attack, and the demigods are defeated. And then when arrangement is made by higher authorities and he regains his kingdom, then he's happy again. Then he does something again and he loses his kingdom again. He becomes unhappy again. Sukha dukkha. Based upon the dualities of material enjoyment. Or going back to two verses earlier where Narada says, because of fruitive spirit, karmatma kamyena sharira bhanda, in Bharat Maharaja's, in the teachings of Rishabhdev. The mind becomes colored by fruitive intention. And when the mind is colored by fruitive intention, one sees sukha and dukkha. And one whose mind is not colored by fruitive intention doesn't see that. What do they see? They see Krishna's miraculous display of his energies. Sometimes this variety, sometimes that variety. And service unto him is called for in this variety, and service unto him in a different way is called for him in that variety. It's just different opportunities of service. And now back to Dhruva. Dhruva was confident that the instruction that Narada gave was valuable, but he could not accept it. He could not accept it because his heart was closed. He was too much attached to a particular point of view. You know how it is. You just, you know, everyday conversation. You have a conversation with somebody about X, and you describe X, and they say Y or Z. Let's look at it again. Look at it from this side, look at it from that side. That's X. No, that's Z. Okay. Sometimes we can have differences of opinion of an object, and from this side it may look like an X, and that side may look like a Z. That's okay. But there are situations when persons are so much holding on to a conception. I recently had this experience in Houston. I was invited to attend a deity installation in some devotee's home. And there was an Indian lady who really wanted to attend the function. We didn't know, that the host didn't know that she was a, what's the right adjective, rabid Christian, an aggressive Christian. And although she was Indian, she was married to an American man who was, he was more gentle than she was by far, and then two teenage boys. So she came to the program, and, you know, like, got this far in front of me after the thing was over, and, you know, practically hitting my nose with her fingers, saying, you know, this is idol worship, and so on. I said, can you remove your finger away from my face so we can have a discussion? Just on one note, I said, is God limited or unlimited? God's unlimited. Okay, I agree. That's the God I know. He's unlimited. And similarly, is his compassion limited or unlimited? Unlimited compassion. Okay. Now, I agree. That's the God I know. Now, before Christ appeared, that means if there's only one appearance, then everybody that took birth before Christ appeared went to hell, because there's only one, because God's compassion is limited. Right? And anybody after Christ appeared, if they don't accept the same thing as you accept, they're also going to hell, because there's only one way, right? To me, that's not unlimited compassion. And if you don't do it right in this lifetime, you're also going to hell. I mean, it's a very narrow doorway that very few people are going to fit through. That's not the God that I know. God's unlimited. And his compassion is unlimited. And he can manifest that compassion. And he does manifest that compassion unlimitedly, because he's unlimited, because it's his nature to be compassionate. So let's do it one more time. And she interrupted and said, in the whole expanse of time, there's only one appearance of God through his Son, Jesus Christ. And other than that, everyone's condemned to hell. Okay. Your position is very clear. My position is very clear. And, you know, I made sure the hosts don't invite that lady to a program. Because she was going around, you know, didn't work with me. She was trying some other people very aggressively. There are things like that where some persons don't get it because they choose to not get it. Like Arjuna. He wanted things to go a certain direction. Krishna gave him many explanations of why that was the wrong door to go through, and he kept wanting to go through that one door. Because of holding on very strongly to a particular conception one may not be able to hear. Doesn't mean that person can't make spiritual advancement, but they then go through this sukkam bhakti program to become, at least that's another path for them to go. And Krishna is so merciful, he fulfills everyone's desires. So what happened was Dhruva attained Vishnu and that kingdom that he wanted. But he also attained the kingdom of his father and had to remain there for 60,000 years or something like that, maintaining the kingdom. And then Vishnu left. And Dhruva was crying. I could have been with him. But because I had these material desires, now I have to stay here and be separated from him. There's choices that we make in what we do with the material desires that we have, and there are different options to become free from those material desires. The path of devotional service ultimately, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param, one can attain the abode of the Supreme Lord in this indirect method also. Although the option may be presented to us, the direct method. To be continued. Yes.
How do we recognize the difference between being honest, never let us give up our independent mindedness?
How do we recognize the difference between being honest and being reluctant to let go of our material desires? That was your question. Well, the first step of honesty is self-honesty, that I have these material desires. And then, when you have different options presented to you, that's where the reluctance or the acceptance comes in. You know, and let's say in the regulative process of bhakti, it is recommended by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I strongly advocate the same, to go in steps. So, first is self-honesty. I'm over here, the goal is over there. I'm not at the goal yet. And these are ways in which I'm not at that goal. Now, for me, a step that I think is sustainable to get to that goal is this. Now, self-honesty is, well, maybe I have greater capacity. Maybe I don't have that capacity. Whatever my capacity is, so it's some appraisal of what your capacity is, and you do that and sustain it. And we also have those that are guiding us and can help us understand, aside from our own self-evaluation, what's sustainable. And they can give us some advice on this much is sustainable. Maybe you could do more. Like, let's say, you know, someone is beginning chanting, and how many rounds should they chant each day in the beginning stages? So, what's something that you can sustain? One of the youth in our congregation, they had a birthday. They said, I want to start chanting 16 rounds. And I suggested, why don't you do this, knowing the individual? You're now X number of years old. Chant X number of rounds per year, and then next year you can chant X plus 1 until X plus 2 until it becomes 16. What do you think of that? Yeah, I think that's a good plan. Because there can be the utsaha mai, the false enthusiasm, beyond one's capacity to sustain. So, self-honesty, self-evaluation, guidance from others, and then I can have a clearer sense of when I'm just being reluctant to let go of some material attachment or false shelter, and something that I'm just being honest, it's not as yet. My spiritual development is not as yet permitting me to fully overcome that attachment. Okay, follow.
Sometimes when they recognize it happens, that I like to hear the different options and then
select from the menu.
And how do we avoid that mentality?
Well, selecting options from a menu may not be a bad idea if we're capable of being self-honest and understand the process that we're undergoing by looking at that menu. You know, it's like checking inside and seeing what really there is, you know, what feels comfortable, and that's, you know, you put that to the side, and something that spiritually will help me the most, that I can sustain. I mean, comfortable in the sense of sense gratification. Well, that matches my sense gratification program. That's nice. A thought is coming to mind. Something that I heard Ramabhadra's wife, Satya, described. She's a Gurukuli graduate who became the equivalent of, you know, she runs the temple. She runs a major part of the Brooklyn temple, and she runs the whole Rath Yatra. Ramabhadra's, you know, gives her that full freedom. This was last year because I didn't attend Rath Yatra this year. But she was like, you know, running around with stacks of papers in her hand and said, you know, these kids, they come here and they can sit in the temple room with kirtan all day long. They ask them to go wash the pots, clean the floor, you know, clean the bathroom. There's like, you know, 60 people up there using the bathroom. Can a couple of you guys go clean the bathroom? And it looked like, I can go to the kirtan. They're not even saying, I got to chant my rounds set yet. They just want to go to the kirtan. Because, you know, they're choosing to not do responsible, simple, responsible thing. You know, can you go, the kitchen is asking for some extra veg cutters for half an hour. Oh, we're going to be in the kirtan. So they can, you know, so that's an example. It's certainly within their scope of capacity to go cut vegetables for half an hour or clean the bathrooms or something. But she would trust you. Her message was the use of their kirtan. I mean, it's not useless, but the purpose is to awaken one's desire to serve Krishna, which she said, and where is their desire to serve Krishna? And it becomes like, you know, the culture. All night long, they can attend the kirtan. So, that's just an example of something that's very clearly one doesn't want to let go. Not as beyond one's capacity. Yes?
Good morning. My question is related to this phrase, Kadakadatmana. It's mostly in a day-to-day life, people, when they give the praise after giving, it's mostly, for me, in the work life, people trying to have some perceptions about others.
People trying to?
Have perceptions.
Have, they're trying to, they have perception.
About others. Okay. And based on those perceptions, they judge. This person is capable, incapable, so on and so forth.
Okay.
For me, it's a struggle from time to time to prove either that I'm capable or incapable based on my own capacity. So it's mostly a struggle of proving them wrong or whatever it is based on my own responsibility. And I can, the conflict for me is the same thing happens in relationships. I can So how do you maintain that?
How do you do what?
How do you maintain a relationship?
How do you maintain the relationship?
At the same time, having not getting the same struggle of judging or proving that they were wrong and actually.
Well, there's okay. It's a loaded question. And let me unpack it a little bit. One is whether you're judging others and whether you're feeling that you're being judged and then trying to prove yourself. All three of those are material. The best is inwardly to cultivate your Krishna consciousness, so that you may very well know who you are, what your capacities and shortcomings are, pluses and minuses and strengths and weaknesses, and you know who you are. And accept that. And then try to go another step of service to Krishna, another level, another standard, according to your capacity. And do so with conviction, with guidance, and be content. And then there's this thing out there. There's praise or criticism. And I'm not on this Akama platform, I'm in this other space. But I know who I am. I know my strengths, I know my limitations. I know my shortcomings, and I have a very secure relationship with my spiritual master and those who are guiding me, and that's sufficient. One is feeling protected by that. What I just said to you was said in a much longer version in the Vyasa Puja address in New York last year, much more expanded version of that. Then you're okay. So then, your specific question, what about relationships with those persons who you might be judging, or relationships with those who you perceive are judging you? You don't participate in the judging or responding to being judged, because it's going to come. Somebody forwarded this little saying. It was a Mark Twain saying. Anyway, I think it was Kavi Chandramarsh sent it out, saying, in this world, there are missionaries. In this world, there are critics. In this world, there are politicians. And that's just the way the world is made up. We have to accept it. You remain neutral to that. Don't judge, oh, they're judging me. And you get all involved, you get sucked into that energy. You don't have to go there. And if you're feeling very contented within, you don't go there. Because the standard is, I know I'm here, I know my limitations, and there's certain of those I'm working on, and it's known by those who are guiding me, and I'm fine with that. And so how do I have a relationship with these other persons? Respect. They're going through whatever they're going through. And they have their relationship with Krishna and persons that are guiding them and the whole thing. So, as I would wish that someone respects me going through what I'm going through, with my limitations and capacities and service, I respect them and their relationship with Krishna. So how do I have a relationship with them? Put Krishna in the center. And I'm trying to please Krishna, and you're trying to please Krishna. So let's you can extend an invitation. They may say, no, I don't want to have a relationship with you because you have this limitation. I'd rather criticize you. That can be our relationship. Okay, that can be our relationship. But I'm still contented. Again, my thought is going to the same person I mentioned in the previous class. I won't mention again. But you know, that person can come and criticize and criticize, and it's quite okay because that's what he does. No, if you do this, you criticize. You don't do this, you criticize. You do that, you criticize. You don't do that, you criticize. Because the nature of the person is, he criticizes. He's never happy because he's very unhappy. So that he can't be unhappy with himself, he's unhappy with other people because he can't bear being unhappy towards himself. So it's other people make him unhappy. And we can feel compassion for that person. You know, keep a safe distance, but offer respect because he has a relationship with Krishna and there's something that can help him. So the foundation of my reply is the being secure, feeling that the shelter and the protection of those who are guiding you, and your primary activities of sadhana bhakti. They're your shelter. And in my interactions with others, according to my capacity, I'm going to fundamentally respect and then act in a relationship with Krishna at the center. Try my best to be of service according to my capacity. If that person has a problem, I don't own the problem. They own the problem. I can care about that other person, try to serve them. My responsibility is my advancement in Krishna consciousness and the primary relationships that are helping me go toward Krishna. So my relationships with others is according to my capacity to be of some service to them, not to judge them or to get all concerned about they're praising me or they're blaming me. There's protection, there's strength in that. Even I may have my material desire. Let your attention go a little bit away from that, and very quickly, it's like a vortex. You may be on the periphery, but very quickly, you're gone. You get sucked into that vortex of the material energy, saying, you know, whoa, Krishna, I forgot even calling out for Krishna. I just like get involved in the material energy. And I'm down at the bottom again. How'd that happen so quickly? This morning I was watching the sunrise. And in the sky, there wasn't the whole canopy of stars because there's a lot of light from the city of Chicago. When you get out in the country, you can see the whole canopy of the stars. It's really spectacular. So there were a certain, you know, number of very bright luminaries in the sky. But as the sun was rising, one by one they disappeared. The planets didn't disappear. The light didn't disappear. But the light of the sun was so strong, it made the light from those planets in the sky become insignificant. The darkness was dissipated by the light of the sun. In the darkness of the night, there's some illumination. Similarly, as your Krishna consciousness awakens, that stuff becomes insignificant. It's not even a matter of tolerating it, it's a matter of it's insignificant. Your devotional service to Guru and Krishna is that light. You remain in that light. And then you have relationships in that context according to your capacity and the abilities that Krishna has given you, recognizing the limitations and continuing on the path to Krishna. It's nice. The impetus, one of the impetuses is, the other is miserable. We don't like to be miserable. We like the other. Like it nice. Krishna consciousness is nice. Yes?
Is that another restriction of self-esteem?
Say it again?
Is that another restriction of self-esteem?
I got the self-esteem part.
Is that another description of self-esteem?
Well, there's material and there's spiritual self-esteem. He wants to take the microphone back. The pride, material pride, is, you know, it's, there's varieties of it, but it's a little bit like, you know, the former description. And real self-esteem, there's a spiritual counterpart, and that is, wow, I have a relationship with Krishna. That's light that dissipates all darkness. All right? Titendriya? Two men having an argument. Which is more powerful, a rock or scissors? So this meant rock and this meant scissors. And then the one that was something like the one that was saying scissors was in a boat, and the boat capsized, so he was going down, going like this, and drowned. So much absorbed in argumentum ad baculum that the higher purpose of life is lost. Life is lost. Simply absorbed in endless argument.
Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai.